get underway. This is the, well, first, I want to apologize for the title of the panel, because I realized that trans women are also women, so the 2X chromosomes thing was stupid. But anyway, this is the Women of Image Comics panel. And these are our panelists, and I'll introduce them. They're sitting in a slightly different order than my slideshow is, but that's okay. They can just wave. Okay, first we have Fiona Staples, artist on Saga. Ongoing series. She's signing today at 1, right?
At the Image booth.
At the Image booth, yes. And next we have Ming Doyle. She's artist on Mara, which will be starting in December 2012. It's written by... She's an artist alley table...
B2.
And next we have Amy Reeder, artist on...
Yeah, I'm next to Ming at B1, so you guys should all come out that way.
Yeah. And we have Alex DeCampi and Christine Larson. Valentine is out now. And Alex has a copy to show you.
Beautiful.
And we have Jordi Belair. She's the colorist on such comics as The Manhattan Project, Mara, Norman, or Norman, which is upcoming, and Come Back. Are you doing a signing on Hickman today?
No, that was yesterday.
Oh, that was yesterday.
Jen, we're doing a signing at Image.
Oh, yes. Yeah, you're doing a signing at 5?
We're doing... 4 to 5.
4 to 5.
We're signing an Image. We've also got a table in Artist Alley. We're kind of back in Siberia. So we're in CC15, so head to the back of the hall, hang a right, and once you pass the polar bears, you'll get to us.
Okay, so I just wanted to get started with, you know, our origin stories, which are always of kind of anthropological interest to other people, because they really want to know, how did a woman get into comics? Like, you know, you're a woman getting into, like, living with wolves or something. So, we could just go down the line and talk about how you got into comics and what your origin story is.
Yeah, just okay. I started doing comics sort of on my own, on the side. I started contributing to a lot of anthologies, and eventually editor over at Ape Entertainment saw my work, and I don't know, just kind of snowballed from there. I just started doing more and more comic work and working with different writers and stuff, so it was a natural progression.
You're also lucky to be in Philadelphia, because you've got, there's a really supportive indie comics community there. I ended up working with you, because I was recommended,
by Cartoonist Society. The Philly Cartoonist Society really kind of, they hooked us up, and actually that's one of my first big comic gigs, were through a member there, so I guess that's how that happened.
I blame ElfQuest. When I was growing up, I read a lot of Asterix and ElfQuest, which was this amazing series in the 70s about elves and wolves and stuff. Partly written by a woman and very kind of appealing to women and girls. And then my mother would give me like 50 cents and tell me to go buy a comic book from the spinner rack in the drugstore, because then I'd shut up for an hour. So I got hooked on to the X-Men, and I loved Punk Storm. And I remember the first line of Shakespeare I ever read was Mohawk Storm, quoting King Lear. The Russian I know to this day is still Colossus's dialogue. Dovarish. I know, I'm sad. And then I kind of got out of comics for a while and was writing and filmmaking and stuff. Then a friend of mine was moving out of his army barracks in the UK. And he's like, I have all these comics, and I'm just going to throw them away. And I'm like, don't throw away comics. So he hands me this stack of, like, Vertigo comics and 2000 AD, when, like, Creature was coming out, and, like, Lucifer, and some really amazing books that I love to this day. And 2000 AD is the British sci-fi fantasy weekly, which is also just so wonderful. And I got hooked again, and then I started writing comics again, and then now I live in poverty, but I'm really happy.
I got my start through reading manga, I guess, and then I got it was pretty early on that I started reading it, and I found this like Rising Stars of Manga book in the bookstore. It was this contest thing where like you submit 20 pages to a 20 page entry to like Tokyopop,
and then they take your soul.
And then but not really. Like there's a lot of. Alex can probably attest to this because she wrote a book for Tokyopop, right?
Yeah,
two books. Okay. Yeah, I read Cat and Mouse.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So there was like a lot of people saying like you should never go there, but for a complete unknown like me, it was like really awesome deal. But yeah. So I did one of the contest entries and made it into one of those books, and then they got me in contact with the editors and. They ignored me for a while, but then, like, eventually I got a 3-volume book deal. And at that point, I'd only drawn 35 pages of sequential art, so I've been really lucky. And then, like, they wanted, like, the editor that wanted me at Tokyopop moved to DC under Bob Schreck, and then they moved to Vertigo, and then that's how I got my Madame Xanadu gig. So, I've just been really, really lucky. In my case, I think I've been lucky enough to find people who want women in comics, but it was not a deal at all in Tokyopop. It was whether you were American or not, but like most of them were women, so it's like a really weird thing to have that asked to me when I went to Madame Xanadu, but now I kind of understand a little bit like why it's an issue. So anyway, yeah.
I started doing comics in art college when I worked part-time in a comic book store. In my last year of school, I started working on my first series. It was called Done to Death. It was like this horror vampire series that I did with a local writer. And that sort of led to me doing more indie work and small press stuff, mostly horror, the odd cover, a bunch of little jobs. I guess my sort of break came when the director of the movie Trick or Treat hired me to do the comic adaptation of his movie, and that was published by Wildstorm, so that was like my in to one of the bigger companies. And from there, I just started doing more work for Wildstorm. I did a bunch of stuff for DC and various other companies, and now I'm like 6 years into my career, I guess, and I'm trying to move back towards creator and stuff.
I also was in the Jennifer's Body graphic novel adaptation, so horrible horror movie connection. Nice, yeah. I got into comics after I graduated from fine art school. I didn't work at a comic book shop. I was just, you know, I like comics because I read a lot of items. Some of them are sequential. And after I graduated from art school, I had no idea if I wanted to be a fine artist, like a gallery artist, if I wanted to go into advertising, storyboards, like what the deal was. So I moved back home with my parents, and they let me do that, rent-free, which is very key. And I had no way to pass the time, I was just trying to stave off like existential panic, so I just started rewatching the entire Batman the Animated Series, because there was a sale at Best Buy. So I was watching all of them, like, you know, at 3 a.m., totally alone, 22, in my parents' house. And I just started drawing a ton of, I guess it was fan art, I didn't really realize it, I was just watching the cartoons, and I was like, oh man, it would be better if Batman looked like this. So I would draw my takes on the characters, and then I would just post them to my live journal on the internet. And through that, this guy named Dean Tripp, who runs a site called Project Rooftop, which specializes in superhero costume redesigns, wrote me an email, and he was like, hey, I like your weird versions of superheroes that aren't right, can I post them like on my site? I said, yeah, that'd be great. And actually through Project Rooftop and just having the art featured there and like participating in contests, actual comic book editors started writing, like emailing me and saying, would you have interest in, you know, drawing this free anthology story? And I lived at home for free, so money wasn't an issue, and I was able to do that, and it just led to more and better work. And now I'm also 6 years into my career and trying to make it happen on the creator-owned side. So that's all.
I went to art school as well, and actually I used to draw instead of color, and then I met people like Ramon Perez, Tom Fowler, and Ming Doyle, and they all thought I could draw. And I thought that was,
thank you.
I thought that was really nice, but it wasn't really quite my thing. So one day, my boyfriend at the time, who I met, Declan Shelby, who draws for Marvel, had a conversation at once, and he said, what do you want to do? Do you want to draw? I'm 22, 21, and I was like, I just want to be happy. And he looked at me and says, you're aimless. And I was like, oh, what, aimless? And he's like, you need to find a direction. Like, do you want to work in comics? Work in comics. And I think that was a moment where he told me there's such an assembly line of comics. I never really considered a colorist or an inker or a penciler position. So when I thought about coloring, I immediately told people like Tom, like Ramon, like Ming, and suddenly they were like, oh, so you used to be able to draw, but now you're coloring, and it's even better than your drawing.
I didn't say that ever. I never said that.
No.
What is mean?
No. So I was very lucky, basically, that I met so many of you wonderfully talented people in college who somehow accepted me and then allowed me to color their books, and they keep letting me color their books. And that's how I started coloring comics.
Cool. All right. Okay, so I want to kind of keep this kind of conversational. So if anybody has a question that pops up while we're talking, just shoot your hand up and we'll answer. Oh, go ahead.
I read an account a while ago about a woman who brought her art to either DC or Marvel, I don't remember, and her protagonist had a somewhat alternative, or at least alternative to their standards, body type, and she was told by them that her anatomy was wrong because it had been referred to the Sports Illustrated swimsuit edition for correct anatomy, and I just wondered if you guys had any issues with that.
Yeah, I saw that. I think the account you're referring to, I saw on Tumblr, it's the same one. And yeah, I just wanted to say, I think it's interesting that none of us here really went through the traditional submission process to Marvel and DC, where you create like a, you know, 6-page pitch of your pencils or inks or whatever. We all just sort of started out doing what we love and making more organic connections and working with our friends, I guess. But, yeah, I don't think we went through the traditional submission process. We sort of found our own way in, and it's really different for each of us. But we didn't even bother with that sort of criticism, I guess. We just did our own thing and worked out.
But I think as a result of that, like, we all draw people how we want to draw people, or how we observe people looking. So, I mean, at this point in my life, not that I'm some wizened, hardened professional expert who has the final say and will never change my art style, but, like, if an editor came up to me and was like, you know, you got to tone that tummy up on that drawing or whatever, that's not how you draw the Marvel way, I'd be like, well, sorry, guess I will continue to draw my image book.
It's kind of, oh, go ahead.
I was actually going to say, even on a coloring level, you know, like, there's a lot of drawings that Ming might do where I could render in, like, all this massive cleavage and bottoms. I don't
do
that.
Right.
Thank you. And so when I was, like, actually first starting to kind of work for Marvel was kind of asking me to maybe render more. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with Matthew Wilson. He's an incredibly talented colorist. He said, don't do that. Like, you keep doing exactly what you want to do, and eventually they're going to just want you for what you want to do. You don't have to feel like you need to somehow mold yourself into this kind of, like, standard of what they want. Like, so, and I think that goes for how women are rendered and drawn, so.
I think that's a really important point. You have to remember that these are big companies, and sometimes if you come in, like, through a direct submission process, can you all hear me?
No.
Okay, sorry. I think that was a really good point, and you just have to remember these are really large companies, and there are many, many editors there. And so if you come in through a direct submission process, and you're an artist, and you meet someone who's a dick to you, just wait, and keep drawing your thing, and don't be affected by being told that you can't draw people with alternative looks, or sexualities, or cultures, or skin colors, or whatever. Just do it and get better, and sooner or later, like, someone who is that dick's boss is going to come to you and be like, please draw these 8 pages, and you're like, no, I kind of would, but no, just say yes.
Marvel also put out Strange Tales, you know what I mean? So you can't really judge the entire company by one comic, by one dude at one con, you know what I mean? And also, there's a certain amount of hearsay in the internet. Like, I don't doubt that that happened to somebody, but, you know, it's the internet. And as far as, like, looking at Sports Illustrated for anatomy, I mean, I don't know, it's more interesting, I think, to draw people. I mean, I think especially for everyone on this panel, like, everyone's drawing.
That's probably just the only female anatomy he was associated with.
Right.
But yeah, there's bad editors.
Yeah.
So, like, just try and find the ones that have taste that you like and come to them.
Okay, yeah, so this kind of brings us, I'm calling this female gaze, and why is it not in order? Anyway, but yeah, just how does being a woman, and we've given some examples, affect the creative process? And just your entry into comics. So do you think that the interactions you have with editors, with writers, kind of affects the way they treat women in their work?
I would say that's never happened to me. I mean, I feel like usually the writers I work with and the editors I work with, especially because I do a lot more kids-oriented stuff, that I'm approached as an artist, not necessarily a female artist, which is the way I would prefer to be approached. I don't want to be like, hey, lady, how about you draw a lady book for me? I want to be an artist.
You have a vagina and you can hold a pencil too? Oh my god!
No, but in the depictions, you are telling the depictions of people as people, and so much of comics is created from a male perspective. Like, what does the world look like in an ideal sense to this particular small subset of men? And, you know, with comics, with women writing and drawing them, we have the opportunity to kind of shift that perspective and show the world kind of through more female or women's perspective. And so I have here just two depictions of some pretty hot men from one from Sago and from Valentine. And they're heroic in a different sense than and attractive than, you know, the prominent male characters would be in a superhero comic that's obviously targeted to men. And I just wondered if any of you wanted to talk about that. And then I have something really sexy to show you, so.
Oh my.
Okay, if I can talk about the Saga characters for a minute. When Brian Vaughn, the writer, was describing them to me when we first started working on the project, he didn't give me too much direction on them, actually. He just said, they're supposed to be an attractive couple, and he has, like, ram horns and she has wings. And I thought, well, okay, what's attractive? I guess it's very subjective. When it comes to women in the media, obviously there's a very narrow range of, like, bodies and facial features and skin colors that we see. So women have to fit a much narrower ideal, I think. But when it comes to male sex symbols, it could be anyone from, like, Liam Neeson to Adrian Brody to, like, Michael Clarke Duncan. Like, there's a huge amount of variety. I don't think we're used to seeing any specific set of features that define what makes an attractive man. So I just kind of did what I liked, I guess.
Yeah. Actually, can I ask you a question? So, I mean, it's very similar to Mara in that way. I think when Mara first began, Ming has a very open view, I think, about, you know, ethnicity in comics, which I think is really important. No, like, all these white people in comics get all. No, I find it very interesting. You said you just said attractive people. Was, like, the ethnicity not set up in any... Did you totally just choose everything on your own?
Yeah, I did. He didn't specify any ethnicity or his hair or skin color or anything like that. I know there's a... I think there's a lack of Asian leading men, like, in media, in, not just in comics, but in all, like, North American culture, in movies and TV and everything. So... how do we capitalize on that to make our character more memorable?
Yeah. And different and unique.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. I have to say, like, from as a writer, having worked with both male and female artists, the one thing I really love about, and also as a reader of comics and a lot of manga, one of the nice things about working, it's different about working with female artists, is
especially in depictions of like teenage girls or teenage boys or younger characters, there's a lot more attention paid to what they would wear and how they would look and making them all not look identical. I mean, whether it's just like they go down to the mall and they look at kids, or there's just something about, you know, there's a little more attention to current fashion. It really helps because I find that like if kids don't look like kids, like they're not like, if you're like a teenager and you pick up a book and the clothes are crap and the characters are kind of look like 40-year-olds, you're not going to read it. You're just going to be like, ugh. Whereas I bought manga specifically because the clothes are amazing.
Yeah, there's kind of a shorthand in superhero comics. If it's a teenage girl, she's wearing a crop top.
And mom jeans and a thong. Like, what?
Yeah, it's like so dressed like that.
I feel like it's 1982, kids.
Yeah.
And also, you know, I have another book coming, a self-published book called Ashes, and there's a sequence in the beginning where we're meeting a character 5 years after we last saw her, and she's kind of gained some weight, and she's going for a job interview, and she's trying to put her old, like, good clothes on, because she's been schlubbing around in, like, whatever for, like, 5 years and kind of moping. And she can't, like, she's, like, trying to get, it's, like, it's something that, like, a lot of women would be used to, like, you gain 5 pounds, you pull on your good jeans, and you're like, oh, shit. And I couldn't get this guy to make the girl fat enough. Like, I was like, no, she's not a model. Like, she's bigger. Please, bigger. He couldn't understand that, like, you know, she could still be, like, appealing that at the same time. But on the other hand, I also have covers by Coop who, like, rocks, like, the size 14 like nobody else in the world. So, you know, it's an interesting, they're like, interesting sometimes little details. They're harder than with, depending on who you're working with.
Okay, we had a question right there. Just go ahead and shut it out.
So this is to Fiona Staples, and I have to just say straight out, I'm a new mom. I have a 1-year-old. And the first cover of Saga with a breastfeeding mom was one of the most radical actions that you could have ever done. Especially the day and age where you hear women being accosted while they're breastfeeding, being told that they can't breastfeed. And I wonder, what made you do that image? Because it had a mother.
Well, first of all, thank you so much. And I have to give credit to Brian, honestly, for the first cover. The concept all came from him. He, I think from the first, or since he, like, conceived the idea for the book, he wanted to have the first cover just be a simple shot of the family. Alana is sort of addressing the viewer with her gaze while breastfeeding the baby and, like, having the other hand on her sort of laser gun. And, yeah, Marco sort of looking away protectively. Yeah, so that came from him, and I just tried to treat it in the best way that I could to try to inject some humanity into the scene. So thank you so much. I'm glad it turned out.
Okay, the first time I saw that image, my son was about 6-7 months old, and he was still breastfeeding, and I was just... And I was still hormonal, so I just started crying. Okay, and here's that sexy image I promised you. It debuted last night at the Saga panel, but if you weren't here, or weren't there, you can see it now. Oh, wow. Usually it's like a man with his arms.
So these are two characters from Saga, two of our bounty hunters, or freelancers as we call them, the Will and his girlfriend, or ex-girlfriend, the Stock. And I think their pose sort of encapsulates their relationship. Yeah. So that's going to be our cover for issue 9, which is out in January.
Okay, and yeah, it's kind of a discussion like a sexy imagery, and in there's kind of a, if do you think there's a difference in the way a woman would want to view or would view something as sexy? There are things that men think are sexy that I know we would be like, no. So So, like, just these scenes, you know, with the Lady of the Lake and Valentine, it's very intimate and quiet. And even the scene, Alana has just given birth, and she's just totally sassy and talking about how they made the baby. So, what differences do you see in how you depict things like that? Just anybody?
I think most of my direction just comes from the script, so I do whatever I can to get their character across and act out the scene, and I just try to make their expressions and body language reflect the dialogue. So that's, you know, telling the story is sort of my first priority, and to make it sexy, I don't really go in for sexy poses too much, or like obvious sort of nudity and, you know, Brokeback stuff like that. I try to do it mostly through the facial expressions, I suppose. Something that the other girls are really good at, too.
I don't know. I think that's the only time I've ever drawn two people kissing. Usually my stuff is much more, like, personal comics and, personal comics and even, some stuff I've done with some other writers is usually more violent. It's not like Kung Fu Panda, that's not that violent. But, so, I mean, it's a, when you're drawing, when I approached the scene when I was reading the script, I just, it's like the beginning of this dude's obsession with this woman, so you kind of need there to be a moment there, like a very tangible moment. Because it's very like Romeo and Juliet, like he meets her once and then he's like crazy about her. So, I don't know, I tried to approach it that way. Like there would be a lasting connection between those people. But I don't know that I really thought of it being sexy. Like, I thought of it being intimate.
Right, yeah.
Kind
of a difference.
Yeah.
No, I was just going to say really fast that, I mean, I don't know if this is a girl thing or not, but, like, seems like when I try to make something sexy, it has to be believable. I think that that's kind of important to girls, maybe. Like, we gotta believe that it's actually feasible and that it could actually happen. In a way, like, I mean, it's still, like, it could still be on different planets with different types of aliens and love, you know, but it still has to be, like, something that could be emotionally and, like, mentally feasible in a way, you know, like, where and, you know, where there's actual brain work going on and stuff like that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, again, from the writer's perspective, like, I like sexy stuff. when you're writing it, it just has to be, like, I think, as long as, as Amy says, the female characters are believable and their choices are understandable, it's really important. And they've got some sense of agency in there. It's not just like man comes up, woman. You know, like for me, sexy women are strong and intelligent, and like make interesting choices, and I like, you know, sexy outfits as well, but they also have to like obey the laws of gravity.
Okay, and so kind of segues into depictions of beauty, and like with Mara, that Mina's drawing, it's beauty is essential because she is supposed to be this perfect specimen of a woman. And that can be problematic because we all have different interpretations of that. But so if you could just kind of talk about how you went through that process. And
yeah, it's funny. My Mara picture is the one on the far left here where she's in
with
the
volleyballs.
Yeah, with the volleyballs and the bikini. And that's that page in the script, the way that Brian has it set up, that's specifically supposed to be a shot from like a kind of GQ Sports Illustrated spread. Otherwise I don't tend to just draw women hanging out like that for fun. So for that, like I was very consciously trying to do the objectification, and as I was drawing it I realized that it was kind of difficult and didn't come to me so naturally because I was like, wow, this is the first time I've really sat down and just tried to draw like a sexy human object and not really thought about what was going on, like just trying to make the pure eye candy like that, and it was kind of skeevy, but it was also interesting to do because, like, that's such a component of her character. Like, here I'm talking about this. The first issue comes out in December, so if you don't know, that's fine. But she's a celebrity, and that's basically all you have to know. And so that's, like, always on her mind, her appearance and everything like that. And I think it's on all of our minds. And it's definitely been a challenge because, like, whenever when I first started in comics, I really wanted to do superhero comics, like Batman, Superman, Marvel, all that. And editors and other artists just always told me, like, oh, your style's too girly or romantic or lush or whatever. Like, it couldn't be in a superhero comic. Lush. And I was lush. And I was like, yes, I know. but I still draw, you know, superheroes the way that I think they are, and, you know, just because they're muscular and they got lips, like, you know, that's all right to me. So body type is interesting. I think as long as you vary it, then that's wonderful, and that's something that some people don't do. Like, I noticed a lot of artists, male and female, are guilty of just, like, having a prototype, like, this is woman form, this is man form. And if there's not that kind of thinking about what the physicality of a character would be in a real world, then that's not very convincing or compelling one way or the other, right?
I find that people who draw those, this is woman form, this is man form, don't look at all like either of those forms, which kind of...
Yeah, true that.
And in the middle there we have Eve from Halloween Eve, and I thought this image was really interesting. You can't really see it here, but she's holding up a mirror, and it's at somebody else, and it's somebody with, like, curly light brown hair and, you know, pale skin, and she's much different from that. And I just wanted to ask Amy about what went into designing Eve, and she's great throughout the book. Her character expressions are just amazing. And
thank you.
Yeah, so...
Actually, it's so funny because with Eve, it's like, for some reason, the way I designed her and stuff happened to make her more expressive than I've been able to be with any character. So that was really fun. But Eve, like, I was very conscious of, like, attractive females and having them be diverse and stuff. It's not that it's really, like, a point in the story so much. I mean, it probably informs who she is a little bit, but it was more like if you can have somebody who's a main character in a story who's not white, why not just do it? I think, like, so it was important that she was beautiful. Also, like, she's a little hard to deal with at the beginning of the book, so, like, I wanted to make sure that, like, she was sort of totally adorable. In a way, it, like, couldn't help just being adorable at the same time. But so I definitely think about different forms of sexy, and I'm a big fan of Ross Campbell, who draws all different types of women in different shapes and races and sizes, and so, yeah, I always follow, like, everything he does, so I'm sure that I'm somewhat informed by that as well. But yeah, there's a lot of different types of beautiful, so it's nice to see a lot of that with these artists up here.
We have a question back there. It's by recommendation. We'll get to it at the end. That was actually something we were going to talk about. I wanted to talk about making women people in comics. And not objects or not prizes, and just what goes into their characterization. So, let's see how much time we have left. About half hour. So, there are a lot of different kinds of women. I kind of divided the way you can develop a woman according to Jane Austen types. So, like, they can have flaws that they need to overcome, like Emma Woodhouse. They can go through some unexpected change, like Eleanor and Marianne Dashwood, or they can just be really awesome and just delve deeper into their awesomeness, like Elizabeth Bennet. So I just wanted to see how you guys view developing women as characters and the importance of that, given what we usually see.
It's no different from developing men as characters, and you just have to, like, people have to have normal reactions to stuff, because that's more interesting and more believable and more appealing if, you know, something horrible happens and they make a bad choice or they lie or they chicken out a little bit. You know, they're much more appealing because you're like, okay, well, you know, rather than like something horrible happens and they're like, yes, I will save the day. Like, you know, no, I'd be wetting my pants and running for the hills. And though heroes don't necessarily have to do that because it would involve too many costume changes. And those, how do you think that one suit's off? Any character has to just be as much like a real human being as possible, yes, whether it be a woman or a man, or even if you have pets in that book, you know. They all have to make the wrong choices sometimes, because we do.
And when designing characters for the art, I try not to just default to making them sexy, like I know some artists do. And when you don't worry about making them sexy, there's a whole host of other things you can consider, like, you know, their age and their background and their experiences and where they come from, you know, their personality, for example. So I just try to make those things top priority when I'm designing them, like I do with, you know, any other character.
Okay, and let's see. Okay, maybe just briefly talk about working with men in comics, and if you were able to offer them maybe some insight that they might not have had into, you know, an area that's more important to women, or they women seem different, see differently. Because so many of you do work with men, so do I.
I guess I would like just... One thing that I just really like from male writers, and on Halloween Eve, it was actually a really good situation because my friend Brandon Montclair, who was actually the guy who gave me all those opportunities with Tokyo Pop and Vertigo and everything, and has helped me a lot of my career, is the one who's writing it, and he knows exactly what I care about, and he realized that, like, for me, like, conversations in comics are not boring. Like, I find that stuff very interesting. It's not just talking heads. And so I think, like, he knew that that was kind of, like, an important emphasis for me. And it wouldn't be, like, you know, a big yawner if he did something like that. That expressions were important and that he could come up with really complex ones. And that would be fun for me. So he, like, wrote something specifically for me, which was really nice. I mean, not that... That's my advice for all male writers, but definitely just to be sensitive of that, and also because female artists do tend to have, like, different styles a lot of times, not like a house style, that they should be protective of their artists, I think, because it's like a lot of times in the industry, like, the writer's more has more say, like, is a bigger name and stuff like that, and it's like, you know, we can get so lost in that, and since we're so different, it's like we need the writers to back us up, in my opinion.
I've worked with a lot of male artists. I was very lucky in my career to get some really, like, significantly older, very successful male artists interested in drawing my work. And I've had, you know, wonderful artistic relationships with them in terms of them totally getting what I want and being okay with, like, me putting in, like, little atmospheric manga panels of, like, trees, like, leaves falling and, like, bugs crawling and stuff, and reaction shots. I do find that sometimes when I work with people from superhero comics, they want to get, like, they're like, your pacing, they find my pacing different because it is very informed by European comics and by manga. So they'll, like, I'll have a 6-panel page and 2 panels will be silent or reactions or atmosphere, and they'll try to take those 2 panels out, and I'm like, no, you can't do that, because it's really important that we control the speed of the reader through this page, and that there be a sense of atmosphere. The locations, my locations are really important to me, and I, like, write a lot of detail about how the location affects the conversation. It's not a stage set, it's something they interact with and that, you know, that reflects their mood and things. I've had male artists try to bully me in 2 very significant occasions. One of them, there wasn't much I could do about because we were near the end of a project, and I was just like, but I stood my ground. They were like older, and they were like, you know, they felt they were more established. In one case, they were more established than me. In one case, they totally weren't. First time, I was like, well, all right, you know, like I will stand my ground on this thing, and we'll have an argument about it, but that's fine. And then we're both like, okay, we had our argument, let's carry on, and we finished the project. I didn't work with them again because I found them difficult. The other time, someone really tried to bully me very early on in the project, so I fired his ass. So, ladies and gentlemen, like when you're making your comics are fun to create. The moment you stop having fun because the person you're working with is making you miserable for some reason, don't sit there and take it. There are lots of writers and lots of artists out there who would want to work with you, and you can have exciting, happy, fulfilling professional relationships with. It's not, like, you just don't get paid enough for someone to be making your life misery, or you look at your book coming out and you're like, I hate these pages because the person's totally ignoring me, or the pages aren't coming. That's the other thing, never give them money up front. I shit you not. Sorry, girls.
Oh, sure. Oh, I'm sorry, I never introduced myself. I'm Jennifer DeGuzman. I'm the PR and Marketing Director at Image Comics.
Christine Larson, I'm the artist for Valentine and a few other books out right now.
Alex DeCampi, writer of Valentine and other things.
Amy Reeder, artist for Halloween Eve with Image, and I did like That Woman at DC and Madame Xanadu and stuff like that.
I'm Fiona Staples. Right now, I'm the artist of Saga and Image.
Ming Doyle. Right now, I'm also the artist of Mara at Image.
Jordan Miller, colorist of Mara, Manhattan Projects, Comeback, Rocketeer, Cargo of Doom, yada.
Okay, and we can get to the recommendations now. If you have any of other comics created by women.
Anything by Becky Cloonan.
Or just anything. Yeah. Oh,
yeah. Go now and buy Carla Speed McNeil's Find Your Voice. It's an amazing book written by an amazing person. You don't have to read the rest of Finder. It's dangerous, it's bitchy, it's fun, and she gives great teenager. Also, if you like fantasy, Linda Medley's Castle Waiting series from Fantagraphics is long my favorite of mine. She draws beautifully, and the stories are just... Like, I love fantasy books. I grew up reading, like, trashy, shitty, like, fantasy and science fiction novels. And coming back to that, like, actually made me cry when I started reading Castle Waiting. Because it was, like, coming back to this world that I loved, but finally, like, it wasn't misogynistic and rapey and, like, horrible. But it still had all the awesome things I liked. And it was a beautiful object as well.
Oh, it's good when things aren't rapey.
Find Your Voice by Carla Speed McNeil. I believe it's from a comic company with a black equine logo. They may have it.
I wouldn't recommend anything by Faye Heron Hicks. She's got a new book out right now. I think the first half of it or so is online already. It's called I Think the Possibly You're Wrong.
Right. Yeah, I was actually her first editor at Slave Labor Graphics. I did Zombies Calling and The War at Ellesmere. She's amazing. And if you follow her, how she taught herself to draw, like, look up Demonology 101, and when she first started drawing to the point she is now, it's awesome to see her development. It's Faith Erin Hicks. She did Zombies Calling, War at Ellesmere, Friends with Boys, and what was it you were? Oh, yeah, Superhero Girl.
And I just wanted to re-emphasize Becky Cloonan for Death Metal and add Lucy Nisley for introspective, what it's like to be a woman today.
I feel kind of bad, I'm really blanking, but I love Emma Rios from Kelly Sue DeConnick. I know that everybody knows that, but Emma Rios, I think, is an international artist working for Marvel and, you know, a voice in books. You know, she not only is a woman who's younger, she is kicking ass, like, doing something completely completely different and unique, I think, from comics the last forever. So please just support Emma, look at Emma's work, and
she's amazing. Kelly Sue DeConnick and Emma Rios are actually, they're doing a creator-owned comic with Image next year called Pretty Deadly, and it explores the concept of beauty and lack of beauty, and it's a Western. So.
And I'm coloring it.
And Jordy's coloring it. So it's going to be awesome.
I would say if you enjoy very interesting, well-done online comics, Emily Carroll does... the way she handles digital comics is extremely intelligent. Just using the entirety of your screen, basically. Go online. You can go through her website or her blog and look at all her online stuff. It's gorgeous and very whimsical and beautiful to look at.
You probably already all know who Moyoko Anno is. She's a manga creator and I have to catch up on a lot of her books, but Happy Mania was a really, really important book to me when I started getting back into comics. She can do more with silence than most people can do with words. In fact, probably more than it. Like, she can just get emotions across and the way a woman feels when something happens so beautifully using just the line.
And I guess I would just add... Sarah Pacelli's amazing, and Rebecca Isaacs is doing Angel in Faith for Dark Horse, so she's really awesome. And Jill Thompson is amazing.
Oh my god, Beast of Burden, oh my god.
Beast of Burden made me cry, and I'm not a big pet person, so.
Yeah. I'm just going to throw in real quick, Kate. I always pee my pants. I love her website is great.
Sorry, things are coming to me now. I have to back up colorists here. Betty Brockweiser, who colored Honor Soldier. She's actually gonna be doing an Image title. I don't know if that's been announced. She's awesome. Betty Brockweiser, everyone sign on with all of her stuff. I think I've said it before in podcast interviews. She's like a filmmaker for comics. Like, she takes every comic and gives it just like this edge, and she's great. She's an artist in her own way. So
I hope you all understand how incredibly critical color is to the comic. Yes. And how it can it can lift a mediocre page into the brilliant, and how it can, or if on the other hand, it can take a great page and just destroy it. It's like when you start, after you've been creating comics for a while, you get incredibly obsessive about your coloring and your lettering, as you should, because it's 50% of the page. It really, really is.
I was trying to find a picture or an image of something that Jordy colored there. You got it from Sextillion, but just looking at the Manhattan Project, these bright, bold colors, it just really takes the art to another plane, and of course the blood and the guts.
Thank you.
We have 10 minutes, so go ahead and back there. You had your hand up first, and then up here.
Okay, hang on a sec. I'm going to stop you there. Yeah. It's like, this is one of those, privileged things. Women having, there was one female-only party for, women who like comics, and he was bummed because he couldn't go. My problem is with things like Morrison Con that did not have a single female speaker. And they were like, sausage party at the tables. There's still so much both deliberate and accidental sexism and racism and misogyny in comics. That when occasionally, like,
a group who are a minority in comics decide to get together and hang out together, frankly, fuck you, that's all right.
We don't mean to be mean to you, but you feel like a lot of, especially in comics, it's a very privileged thing. They feel like they need to have access to every aspect of what's going on. And
don't get me started on affirmative action. I will go on for a long time.
So, yeah, that. But as long as there still exists this disparity, I think that women-only functions are just still essential to us. You know, whether or not men thinks it's essential to them doesn't matter.
Like, every function's a male, like a white dude-only function. Like, there's so many of them. You know?
But, like, I'm sorry, I'm the moderator.
I'm sorry.
You guys talk.
Actually, I'm going to kind of disagree with Alex on that. I feel like it should always be all-inclusive to anybody. I feel like whenever stuff gets too privileged, I think... I don't like elite stuff ever. That's just a personal thing. I just don't like... You can't come because you're female, or you can't come because you're male, or you can't come because you're this, that, or the other. Especially Boca, which, like, alternative comics, women have been in alternative comics since the 60s. It's not... I feel like the rise of women in comics is the rise of the independent comic. If independent comics didn't come up, we would still see, I think, a much larger amount of women to men in comics. So, I don't know, but I understand, man. You're, like, super bummed. You're like... hang out with ladies, but it is their right, but I can totally see being like you want to go. I totally get it.
Yeah.
So I'm not.
Okay, we had a question here.
Yes, a question for me.
Yeah.
Talk
about what about Batwoman? Oh, okay.
It's kind of a traditionally beautiful superhero kind of person. I mean, it struck me that she just,
okay. So that she, the question was about, like, whether, like, how did I handle Batwoman visually, as a character and stuff. It was actually really hard. Like, there were, like, a lot of characters in there that were lesbian, and I was trying to basically balance so that each one of them had, like, a really distinct character and different levels of femininity versus masculinity, as defining as that sounds. But Batwoman also, she is pretty sexy, especially in her costume. And that's, like, used almost as, like, a form of, like, distraction and fear. I guess I would kind of, like, make her hunch over a little bit more sometimes, like you know, a little more buff and not so much, like, sticking her ass and boobs out. But to me it was more that she was just a character, and I was a big fan of Batwoman before I jumped in on it, so it was just, like, me trying to make sure that she was really subtle. I felt like that was the most, like, obvious thing about her, was that she was so subtle, and that's so rare for a comic book character. So that's what I tried to capture.
Okay, we had and then you would try to be brief because we have like 5 minutes left. So go ahead.
All right,
I'm an aspiring writer, and what advice would you have for a male writer when it comes to writing women characters?
Talk to Greg Rucka.
Write them like they were your daughter or your wife.
Yeah.
Don't do anything to them you wouldn't want done to your daughter or your wife. And if it still happens, make sure they get their own back.
Just don't focus on that phrase "strong female character" because that's like such a catch-all. Just think about what you would do. Honestly, I mean, you're a human too.
Okay, we have 5 minutes. Yes.
Well, I don't know. I think for women and men, it's the same, you know, as far as talent. But I just want to say, Eric Canetti, self-taught. Adam Hughes, self-taught. Chris Salmi, self-taught.
Yeah.
No, you do not need to go to school. You can practice. You can hone your skill. Schools are great. You network. You meet people. You're allowed to be influenced. I had such an open mind when I left college. I still do, in comparison to some people who didn't. But it's not a necessity to me, no.
How many people up here went to art school?
Okay. I didn't go to art school. I have an MFA in creative writing, but...
I think art school is all well and good. I think it definitely teaches discipline and getting stuff in on time and being able to meet schedules and deadlines and things like that. And again, networking is great. Like that's what, like, you are going to meet people that you're going to work with professionally probably for the next like 10, 20 years. So, yeah.
Can there someone? Yes.
Wait a sec, sorry. If you are self-taught, that's amazing. Please also take some life drawing classes. And please learn perspective, proper perspective. Otherwise, I will never work with you.
I'm self-taught, just so you know.
Awesome.
This is a writing question. I've read articles about how some like strong and actually comic female characters are basically just like male mindsets and
My favorite comic and the comic that got me into comics is Tank Girl. Is Jamie Hewlett's Tank Girl Fashion Outlet. Because I never read superhero comics, and Tank Girl, when I was like a riot girl, 13-year-old punk kid, being a dirt jerk, you know, running around, I love that comic. So, and that's how he said he wrote that, how he wrote her. So I think that, I don't know, I don't mind it. I love exploitation stuff. So I guess it depends on how, what you're into generally.
I think the key, and actually I'm stealing this from Gail Simone, but like the key is just when portraying women, a lot of times it's just diversity. It's like, is there a whole bunch of one kind of thing out there? I personally have a really hard time that I feel like a lot of females are in comics are portrayed as, oh, I can do everything just like a man. Step back. And I kind of like thinking that we are different, and that's awesome, and we should, like, make that be the emphasis. I think a lot about superhero characters, like female superheroes, and how there's so many things that we could do that, like, could be exceptional to us, and I would love, love, love to see more female characters that have, like, self-consciousness that they're dealing with and just, like, issues where they're worried about stuff instead of them being super perfect, even though it's nice that they're powerful. It's nice if they're powerful despite other problems that they might have, personally.
And if you're a male writer, it's totally cool to like ask your female friends or your significant other if they're female, or you know, women you like work with, and just be like, hey, if you're being like chased by a dragon, or like, you know, like just you know, you can ask, and like people will be flattered and honored that you ask their opinion about whether the way you're writing a female character is realistic or not, and then you'll be more informed, hopefully improve the friendship, strike up some interesting conversations.
Okay, I think our time is up. We have 1 minute. I was supposed to have like little goodie bags for people in the audience, but they didn't arrive. So if you come up to the image conference.
Right,
oh,
okay.
Yay, see that.
If you ask a question, you get first dibs at the prize bag, but go ahead and come on up. And I want to thank everybody on the panel.